This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome to episode 130 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, December 6th, 2013. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by the frozen but not so inside her home, Sarah Gooding. Sarah, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jeff?
I am doing fantastic. You know, the other day here it was 56 degrees. I was enjoying every minute of it while it was raining ice down where you're located. And for those who don't know, where are you located?
I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we woke up to about 4 inches of snow. So I'm going to go shuffle my driveway after this show.
Yeah, and I understand you guys also had some ice.
Yes.
All that stuff's moving up this way.
Yeah, I hope you get it too. You'll have fun.
Oh, geez, you hope I get it too. That's fantastic. So I'll just stay inside the house, you know. But now that I work from home, I'm a remote worker. Now my wife expects that driveway to be clean all the time now. So one of the downsides of being a remote worker, I guess. So we got a special show lined up for you today with our special guest. But before we get on to that, we want to get you caught up on the headlines of the week. And the first one is that BBPress 2.5.1 was released. It's the first bug fix release for BBPress 2.5, and what it does is it fixes a few small issues with subscriptions and some style sheet theme compatibilities that were introduced with 2.5. So if you're using BBPress 2.5, you'll want to upgrade to 2.5.1 to introduce some of those bug fixes that were applied. And the second headline this week is that an announcement came out by the organizers of WordCamp Dayton, Ohio, and they're looking for speakers. WordCamp Dayton, Ohio will be held on March 7th and 8th of 2014. They've put out an application now for speakers. If you're interested in speaking at the two-day event, you're encouraged to submit your presentation for review, which I'll link to in the show notes. But it's going to take place on a Friday and Saturday. Now, Friday, March 7th, will be dedicated to hands-on training, which is a refresher course for those interested in starting from the beginning. And Saturday will be filled with tracks for the novice, power users, and developers with everything sort of in between. And we're starting to see this at more WordCamps where instead of the typical Saturday-Sunday routine, some of them are doing just a one-day event depending on the size and their location, and others are doing this special Friday-Saturday thing where Friday is dedicated to, let's say, local businesses or people really wanting to get in depth or like a hands-on beginner's course of WordPress. I know that Columbus did something similar. WordCamp Columbus, Ohio did something similar last year, and it was a big success. I think they might be doing that again for next year. So congratulations to them, and I will be in attendance at WordCamp Dayton, so hopefully I'll see you there. And the last headline we want to get you updated on is that WordSesh 2 has arrived. We've mentioned this a few weeks ago. And WordSesh 2 is a live, almost like a virtual WordCamp. It starts tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a free 24-hour live event filled with some of the brightest minds in the WordPress community, sharing their knowledge for the benefit of everyone. And you don't have to leave your house to see it. You can log right in. Everything will be done via Google Hangouts and a chat room. And you can head over to wordsesh.org for more details. In fact, our special guest, which we're going to get to here in a moment, will be participating in that event. Starts tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, and I will actually be participating in a podcaster's roundtable Saturday, which I believe is at 1 p.m. Eastern. I hope I get that right. I guess I should know if I'm participating in the event. yeah. So head on over to wordsesh.org to look at the schedule and to find out more information about how to get involved. So with all that said, our special interview subject today was born and raised in Houston, Texas. He's the president of Automatic and the co-founder of WordPress. And the last time this gentleman named Matt Mulloway appeared on the show was July 16, 2010, which, if I remember correctly, was around the time of WordCamp Montreal. And Matt, it's been a long time since you've been on the show. We got a lot to cover, but thank you for coming back. Usually when we do these shows with you or when I do interviews, it's a sort of chronological order of questions. But you're Matt Mulloway. You cover the gamut of all kinds of things that go on in the WordPress community. So I just have a list of questions that I thought would be awesome to ask you if I had the chance. So there's no particular order with these, but it kind of gives us a glimpse as to all the various things that are happening in the community. Now, 2 weeks ago, the EFF, or what we know as the Electronic Frontier Foundation, reported that Automattic was finally taking a stand against fraudulent use of the DMCA to silence voices on WordPress.com. So I wanted to congratulate you on the show on fighting back, but what was it that finally prompted Automattic to step in and combat this type of abuse?
Well, it's kind of funny to put finally in front of it, because there's not really any other companies doing this, partially because, rightly so, you don't really want to get entangled in the legal issues of the people using your platform, because that is a long and slippery route. And in fact, you know, in theory could endanger your immunity or your sort of protections as being a service provider. So why do we get involved? I mean, Automattic has an in-house counsel, Paul Siminski, who's passionate about these issues and goes to Washington, works with the EFF. I think that across Automattic, there's a strong sense of independence and belief in the freedom of the web. And we get angry when we see, you know, rules or legislation or processes designed to protect people being used to sort of do the opposite of WordPress, as mentioned, to undemocratize publishing.
And on that point, I remember reading an article a few months prior to the news of Automattic striking back against the abuse of the, I think it was the gay straight pride, or it was about a gay website, and it had to deal with publishing a PR release, and the other entity that was involved ended up filing a DMCA takedown notice with Automattic, and in retrospect had to actually follow suit with that request and take down the website, in essence silencing the voice. And I started thinking, well, if the mission is to democratize publishing, what's so democratizing about being able to easily just file a notice and silence people on the web? That doesn't seem right.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. So that's why protecting against abuse of the things like the DMCA, and in this case I would say it was particularly flagrant, is so important. And we hope that other service providers, you know, people who provide hosting and speech platforms, will start to do more of the same. Because we see some of these ridiculous things.
I hope you guys win, and this sends a lesson to anybody else out there who thinks they can get away with silencing and censoring people on the web with just filing a notice, that there are repercussions if you choose to use the law in that way. And it's not to say that the DMCA doesn't have its place, because it does, but for it to be abused so easily, I hope something changes in the future and people think twice before actually going through with this again.
I think there will always be abuse, but luckily there will always be people who will fight it, so we hope to be on the ladder.
So I don't know if you had the chance to see this, but there is a conceptual design of the WordPress backend that was created by a fellow named George Cordes, who was an interactive designer and front-end developer based in Melbourne, Australia. And if you've seen the design, what are your thoughts on it, or have you not had a chance to see it?
Is this the one that it showed lots of screenshots on devices and things like that?
Yeah, it had this glossy look to it, semi-transparent, and it had tiles. And it was, the excitement around this design was just, people were, like I mentioned in the post I wrote about it, people were already willing to pay for it, even though it wasn't even available. And it was just a series of concept images that people were just gaga over and just chomping at the bit to use. I just wondered what your thoughts were on it.
Well, I hope that in the About page for 3.8 we can create something as attractive for people. I thought it was presented really well, like the way that he, like you said, made it look like a glossy magazine spread. It felt like it was a fashion shoot for this WordPress admin. That said, I think it was hard to tell exactly a lot of the design decisions that were made, because it was, if we're talking about the same one, it was presented sometimes not as screens, but as like portions of screens.
Yes.
Or at angles or things like that.
Yeah.
And so I can't really say whether it was good or bad, because all design is a series of decisions. And when you're just making a decision for one thing, you're deciding against something else. And often something that looks very pretty at first glance, you know, might actually not be the best thing to use every day. The common example that's kind of a a mini joke among the WordPress core developers is that like a third of the screen for the Ghost dashboard was devoted to the Ghost logo, which is beautiful. I mean, it's cool, but you know, do you really need, you know, that front and center when you log in? I mean, contrast to, I mean, WordPress used to have a much bigger logo. Actually, I don't know if you remember this, but the where we show the blog title, it used to just say WordPress. We didn't show the blog title. But over time, we've kind of minimized it a little bit. So really the focus is on you and your content. And that sort of user orientation to a design is often less sexy because your content might not be as beautiful as a perfectly crafted, you know, featured image or logo or something like that. But ultimately, I think it's more useful to people.
Well, I think some of the excitement was the fact that it was something brand new, something they haven't seen before. I mean, there was that whole being excited about something brand new and just wanting to use it. But on the flip side, as I mentioned in the post I wrote about it, what's the benefit of being pretty if it's not usable? I mean, it's just a series of screenshots. We don't know actually how usable it might be. So it could be pretty, but if we can't use it, you know, what's the point?
Also, we have to remember that most people in the world haven't seen MP6 yet. I'm actually really, I mean, it's old hat to us. Like, I've been running it most of this year. And so when
so
I go to, we have to remember that, you know, 3.7.1, which is the release, the latest release, it still has the old style admin. And if you log into it, it honestly feels really weird. Like you're logging into the 90s or something.
It's that outdated already.
Well, it feels that way. It's actually not bad. It's just that we've been using it for a long time. And I think some of the iconography and things feel a little bit dated. But MP6, in addition to what I'm obviously very fond of, the aesthetic refresh and everything, has a lot of under-the-hood code changes. You know, the fact that we're shipping with multiple color schemes and we can support color schemes really easily enables someone like this designer or anyone else to create, it's so much easier to create skins that perhaps can take advantage of the usability and structure that we've created, that WordPress has, but maybe add some cool transparency or do some different CSS tricks or different iconography or something that can appeal to different people. Yeah. I mean, I don't think everyone's WordPress should look the same. I actually wanted to ship a lot more color schemes than we are. I want a pink one and like a purple one and an orange one. And
to match your Twitter avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember a few years ago when the poll was published by Jen Milo on the WordPress.org website about which kind of color schemes or which ways do you think we should change the WordPress backend? And you remember a theme called Fluency, the dark one?
I do.
Yeah, and there was themes like that, and there was a number of other kind of administration, back-end designs for WordPress, but the most common complaint was it was so hard to maintain them with all of the different design decisions and changes that go on in the back-end of WordPress all the time that a lot of them just fell by the wayside.
And you need to make it work for a lot of devices. You need to make it work. Now it needs to be responsive. You know, so it needs to work across phones, tablets, normal monitors, large monitors. I mean, MP6 is actually a good example. I mean, we had 10 or 15 extraordinarily talented people. They've been working the better part of this year to ship what is currently there. And the initial design was done, you know, in the first month or two. And really it's been the details and the polish since then that's taken a lot of people's time.
And just my personal review of MP6 when I first installed it and I've been using it for months is that it's definitely more readable. I like the darker portions, and in fact, my favorite color scheme in the that's shipping with MP6 and WordPress 3.8 is Midnight. I really like that style.
Nice.
So we have a question. Brian Krogsgaard, who operates the website Post Status, my arch nemesis, by the way, is, well, no, not really, but I sure like to play it up that way. He asked a question. It says, what about a full admin API so that developers can create client-centric admins? What do you think about that idea?
I think it's very much a direction that WordPress is heading. If you look at how a new feature like what we call THX in development, which is essentially the theme screen, essentially what we're doing is we have a backbone-driven page. So really all the meat of it is in the JavaScript on the client side. and there's a lightweight API that provides the data. And this is the direction that I think is both the future of web development and the future of WP admin, is that rather than PHP passing around chunks of HTML, we're passing around chunks of data. And the client, more and more of the logic and presentation and everything is not going to be on the client side in pure JavaScript, which means it could be really fast, really responsive, feel more like an application than a collection of web pages. This, just like any refactor, I think will be done gradually, page by page, through WordPress as we go through. The Media Library was one of the first to pioneer this inside of WordPress. Themes page is now another one. I could totally see all the listing screens going next. Or for certain, I know that we'll have the ability to add and browse themes in this sort of new interface. So as we do that, in theory, I mean, this is really long-term, 5 or 10 years down the road. But you could imagine where WP admin is 95% JavaScript code talking to an API. And there's nothing that says that API necessarily needs to be what today we call WordPress. It could be something written in Python or Node or Go or something else that, as long as it can provide the same data and the same structure, the JavaScript side of WordPress changes. It actually reminds me, it's a Greek thing, Theseus ship. The ship of Theseus. Have you ever heard of this one?
No. No, most of that stuff you just told me goes over my head, but it sounds cool.
So it's sometimes also called Theseus's paradox. And it's basically the idea, I'm going to butcher this horribly, but it's a boat. And, you know, the question is, if every single board in the boat, all the wooden parts are replaced, is it still the same ship? Is it still Theseus's ship, or is it a different ship? And so sort of this, how much, like another way you could say is if we're human and we're starting to be augmented by more and more either devices or, you know, technology, like at what point are we still human? At what point are you still, you know, Jeff and I'm still Matt, or what point do we become something else? So,
man, that's some really trippy stuff right there, man. That's some deep thought.
It is kind of interesting when you think about it. And so WordPress is being replaced piece by piece, not unlike Theseus' ship. And at one point, is it still WordPress? And what does that actually mean? So versus probably how I actually think about it is WordPress isn't just the code that's in the download. It's also the website and the theme directory and the plugin directory and the chats and all the things around it. So as those change, like, I think our concept of WordPress evolves a lot, and it'll be the manner through which WordPress continues to grow at the rate it has, but also means that there'll be conservative folks who aren't happy with the direction.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen, based on history, that you just can't please everyone, so whatever direction WordPress goes in is not going to be the direction everybody else wants to go in, but there are other alternatives out there, and, you know, and in fact, if whatever direction WordPress happens to go in, somebody is willing to either create a theme or a plugin that reverts those changes into the WordPress they love. So generally, that's what happens.
Totally. It was even last night, I did this post about the sort of the coming week leading up to the 3.8 release, and literally like 2 minutes later, this guy left a comment. I said, we just got 3.7. Why are you pushing all these releases on us? And it was kind of funny. The first response I wrote was not very nice because it was late at night. It was like, you know, whatever. It was very late here. And I also woke up super early. I woke up at like 5 a.m. yesterday. So I'd had a long day. But luckily, I deleted that one. I pressed backspace a few times, and I wrote a longer one. And I think a lot of it just comes back to the core philosophy, like, what are your first principles that you're striving for? And can you, even if you disagree with someone, like I disagree with this guy, that it's too soon for another release, how can you articulate those principles in a way that someone can understand and respect, even if they disagree with you, and vice versa?
And that's something the WordPress community overall has struggled to deal with. When we come up with disagreements, usually it you know, that's where the whole argument of what color is the bike shed, and you could go on and on and on and on, and nothing gets done because you can't articulate both sides of the point. But with all that said, you know, a few weeks ago, you gave a keynote presentation at an event that was not WordPress oriented. In fact, it was at the Joomla World Conference. And I just wanted to ask you, what was that experience like? What was it like being in front of all those people, Joomla fans, and you're just dishing out WordPress stats left and right?
It was interesting. You know, it was totally fine. We're both open source, and the manner of the people in both communities are similar. In fact, I met a number of folks at the Joomla conference who told me that they organized WordCamps and were heavy WordPress users. So,
oh wow!
I think that there's more overlap than perhaps you would think at first. I know there's a fellow who went there all the way from Australia, and he also was like a co-organizer of like WordCamp Sydney or one of those Australian WordCamps. So that it wasn't odd or hard. It was interesting to me to see how we've evolved in parallel but different tracks and sort of sets of decisions that both projects have made over the years influence their later evolution. So, you know, the fork of Joomla was a fork of Mambo, and the criticism of Mambo and Joomla was not dissimilar to the criticism of Habari of me, of where, you know, it was sort of run, there was a single person really in charge of things, and they wanted it to be more committee-based. And so it's kind of like a WordPress world where if Habari had become the dominant version of future of people using WordPress. But it was a lot of fun. Andy Nason went there a day before, so he had done a lot of talking and chatting with people before I even got there. And so it was just the two of us, and it was pretty neat.
Yeah, I know Sarah covered the conference, and there was a large number of comments saying that this was fantastic, that it's a great idea, that we should see more collaboration between all the various open source projects, because that's the commonality they all have in common. They're all about open source ideas, GPL licensed, and I even saw that you visited the Acquia headquarters, and I saw you took a picture of the Drupal logo that's in giant Lego ball of the Drupal drop.
Yeah, it was a funny week for me, because I actually had drinks with Anthony from Squarespace, like just a few days before, and I spoke at Joomla, and then hung out with Dries at the Acquia headquarters the next day. So I was definitely making the rounds. But I think it's not that we should collaborate more, because in some ways we are creating things that are replacement goods for each other. So it's not really, I don't know how much we could actually collaborate on what we do day to day. But I think that we should try to learn as much as possible. Not unlike, you can imagine the projects almost like different nation states. And countries can look to each other and see, oh, given this different set of environment or programs or things can try, here are the results. And just like we might look to Singapore for their healthcare system, or maybe to, what's another good example? Canada for their amazing maple syrup, or, you know. It's just that was a joking one. But, you know, I love Canada. How can you sort of learn as much as possible from people who are similar to you but different in key ways?
Yeah, and because Drupal and Joomla are both PHP-driven applications, that it's easy to learn from. I mean, I know Joomla, I think it's 3.2 was just recently released, and now they have what's the equivalent of WordPress post revisions. They have, like, content revisions now, and who knows, maybe the way they're doing it is better than WordPress. I don't know about code. I doubt it. I don't know, maybe. But, I mean, when Drupal or Joomla is doing functionality similar to WordPress, I can see that there are opportunities there to learn from each other, maybe a different technique or a different way of structuring the code that actually works better.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is, some of it might be implementation of a specific feature. But honestly, I think we're pretty good. What we put our mind to, we can do the best possible version of. But it's more interesting to think about, how did you decide to implement that feature in the first place? Sort of more the people side of it rather than necessarily the code.
So more or less aligns to the WordPress philosophy of design, not decisions, or decisions, not options. Almost.
Yeah, well, I don't think it lines up at all, actually. So it's not about decisions or options. It's about you know, fundamentally in all things that humanity creates, how are decisions made and how do people work together and how are things decided? That's, you know, probably the best definition or the, one of the broadest definitions of work you could think of. So seeing how other people work is an opportunity to influence and perhaps reexamine some of our assumptions with how we work.
But all in all, seeing the different collaboration efforts and the communication that happens between platforms that to some people say are competitors, actually in the grand scheme of things, Drupal, Joomla, and WordPress, it's just fulfilling different needs for different people. And it's just kind of cool to see that there are different choices out there, and really at the core of it, all three platforms support open source philosophies, which I think is a good thing.
Yes. There will always be different choices. I also believe that there will always be a best choice. And so a lot of what we're working on is trying to make WordPress that best choice.
Well, Scott Birkin, I think you know who he is. He published a book.
Guy.
Yeah, he published a book called The Year Without Pants. And it chronicles his time of employment for Automattic. And I thought it was a great read. I learned a bunch of stuff about the inside of Automattic. And he was hired at a critical time at the company. I was just wondering, what do you think of the book and what lessons did you learn about yourself or about Automattic that, you know, you could immediately improve upon or that have been improved upon since the publishing of his book?
It's funny. One thing I definitely learned is that it's really weird to have a book written about you and to read it.
You probably read something. So, I don't say that. I didn't say that, but...
I think it's, I mean, ultimately the book has been super well received. I mean, the reviews on Amazon are fantastic. I know at Automattic we get a ton of people who have read the book and then decide to apply for jobs. And I think it's starting to influence. You almost have this idea now where before the idea of a distributed workforce was somewhat heretical. Now it's sort of seen as an inevitability. And that shift is a little bit subtle, but it's so, 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 so important. So that book, you know, perhaps 37 Signals Remote, and I think more that will come in the future, are really shifting how people think about this. So that's fantastic. The one thing that is, you said, how did it change how we work? I mean, Scott was there. It was a slice of time when teams were first being created. I was talking to Stu West, who's the CFO at Automattic, about it the other day, and he said, it's weird because people ask me about the book, and I actually joined after Scott left, so I didn't overlap with him at all. And there's actually probably, I have to think when Stu joined, but I would guess there's around 130, 140 people who've joined Automattic since Scott left and sort of the book ends.
Yeah, and I thought
a lot has changed.
Yeah, and I just thought it was fascinating. You're right, it's about a slice of time. And before Scott's hiring, it was just a flat hierarchy at Automattic. There were no, based on what I understand, no team structure. It was because I guess having a team structure was corporate, and there's a lot of the philosophy was a whole anti-corporate type of mentality there at Automattic. But as I read the book, and now we see that Automattic has over 200 employees now. There are various teams spread throughout the company. And you mentioned that you would like to see the way that Automattic works go from 200 people to, let's say, 2,000 people. You think that this, the way that Automattic works as a distributed company, can scale up to 2,000 people. And I'm just wondering, with that many people, wouldn't you need to have a lot more teams, a lot more team managers, and then all of a sudden you're starting to get more of that corporate culture into Automattic again?
Well, you say corporate culture like they're almost mutually exclusive. I think every company is corporate by definition, and everyone has a culture. The difference is more whether they plan it and think about it, or whether it's something that happens by accident. And at Automattic, at every stage, I feel like we have thought a lot about what is the culture, and how, what are our first principles and things that we really believe in, and how does that shape the big decisions and the small decisions, and most importantly, the decisions that are made at an individual level when, you know, no one else is looking. That's sort of the how people approach everything. And culture is not, it's not your ping pong tables or your shuffle boards or anything like that. it's really about that. How will it change? I think that by definition, where, and this is kind of what teams are as well, the teams at Automattic, when we introduced them, were kind of modeled after what Automattic, how Automattic worked when we were, you know, 10 to 15 people. You know, we had a designer or two, I was essentially a team lead, and then a bunch of developers hacking on things. And so it's almost like each team is like its own mini Automattic. And so I think what happens is that as we grow, let's say we have, like you said, 2,000 people, it's almost like a fractal where at every point that you zoom in or out, you see something that looks like Automattic at some stage in its growth happening. So maybe there's a 60-person organization that has a number of sub-teams, and it has a lead. And, you know, it's kind of weird because essentially you're describing what sounds like a very traditional hierarchy. But I think the key is to allow the teams and the groups to have the autonomy and the ability to iterate quickly without dependency on other teams or groups. And they can function as efficiently as a small company could because there's nothing by definition holding them back from doing work or overhead that's slowing them down. That's very, very difficult to do because overhead, particularly with communication, is very natural. There's a law that I forget. Maybe someone could Google it. It's the amount of communication. Basically, if you think of, if there's two people in a group, there's only two possible directions for communication to go. But when you go to three, there's nine possible. And if you go to four, so it increases exponentially as you add more people, the possible connections between all the people.
So the question I have is, if you have all these people on all these teams, who's going to be reading all those P2s? That's a lot of P2s.
Do you know we average over 1,000 posts and comments a day
Wow.
at Automattic?
Who reads all those?
No one does. Well, someone reads all of them. Someone reads each one. I think no one reads all of them. I don't even try anymore. I used to try. But really what's important is you don't need to.
And the other question is, if Automattic scales to 2,000 employees, you're going to have to rent out cities, call them Automaticville for like a week. Where are you going to find the room for all these Automattic employees for the Automattic meetups?
Well, there's a, you think of it, it starts to look more like a conference. I mean, there's conferences with 2,000 people, right?
Right.
There's conferences with 10,000 people or 15,000. There's South by Southwest, you know, with 30 or 40,000 people.
So we have a question here in the chat room. Matt Medeiros, who he does Matt Report, and he says he'd like to hear Matt's thoughts about Time designating him as one of the 30 under 30 changing the world.
Oh, well, thank you, other Matt. Matt Report always confuses me because
he always leaves a comment with Matt, and I'm thinking, oh, what Matt Mulloway? Oh, that's just that Matt Report guy.
Much love to other Matts in the world, even though I took all the good domains already. So, yeah, I just found out about the 30 under 30 thing this morning. Mostly, I'm just glad that as I approach, you know, I only have a month of being under 30 left, so hopefully I can get on as many of these lists as possible. So when I'm old, I can tell my grandchildren that I used to be a big deal.
Yeah, I turned 30 in 2 weeks. You and I are about the same age, but you're a lot more successful.
It's all different. Congratulations, by the way. I didn't know that.
Thank you.
It's a little
much.
Scary, isn't it? Like, honestly, I'm slightly.
Well, it's a reflection. It's a reflection point, really, and you start thinking about where you've been, how you've gotten here, and you start thinking about where it is you want to go, and start putting things together and little goals, and to see how you're going to get to where you're going to go. It's definitely a reflection point of life. You know, speaking of these designations, just out of curiosity, when, let's say, Forbes names you, you know, so-and-so under 30, you know, you make their list, or you make Time Magazine's list, or you make who knows whose list, do all those designations really mean anything to you? I mean, do you take pride in being, by having those designations, or has it gotten to the point where, yeah, it's nice, but okay, let's move on now?
Sure, I mean, it's always an honor to be chosen for these sorts of things. The different lists, I think, are some of them are very involved. Like, they do a really in-depth process, or, you know, they might do, like, I think the Forbes one, like, there was a photo shoot, and there was all sorts of stuff involved. For the Time one, I think they just used, like, a stock photo off the web somewhere. So they vary. they vary in their involvement, but each one is an honor. It doesn't make it any less important to get them when you've had them before.
All right, so I got about another question or two. We haven't heard from Sarah this whole show. I don't know what she's doing, but...
Yeah, Sarah, come on, jump in.
But we...
I've got a few questions lined up if Jeff gives me a chance.
Yeah, how about we say you have to go, you have to switch off everyone. So Jeff, you got to wait a minute.
Okay, go ahead, Sarah.
Okay.
Let's take turns. We can share, man.
Let's see. I'm trying to decide if I should ask my most important question or, you know what, I'll just start at the beginning. What is it like to lead a WordPress release? Is it stressful? Do you have to put everything else aside and put anything on hold while you're going through crunch time? What is that experience like, and what kind of advice would you give to the next person who's going to do it?
Whew, it is a not insignificant investment in time. It's very true. And honestly, this is a super busy part of the year. So there's been some times... where there's been conflicts, and you know, we had to reschedule one of the dev meetings and things like that. So it's been tough, but it's also incredibly rewarding. I mean, there's something nice, because most of the work I do is not necessarily deadline oriented, where, you know, our WordPress in automatic now, we ship code to WordPress.com over 100 times a day. You can really iterate and, you know, sort of just kind of glide on things. But this is, we're working towards a date, and we picked a date, and we're hitting it. And there's a different psychology to that almost, where it's almost like you're more in the trenches with folks. Advice I would give, and I think it's different for everyone. You know, when Andy leads a release, he's also doing a lot more of his lead developer roles and committing things and reviewing things and writing a lot of code as well. So I think it's different depending on who is the lead. I can fully expect that we'll have design leads or maybe even like a pure project manager release lead in the future. Part of the idea of changing it with every release and also saying that no one can do it, two consecutive ones, you can do two, but you just can't do two in a row, is to keep it switched up and that we can continue to take different approaches and sort of see the pluses and minuses of it. Definitely a plus that I feel that is maybe almost an unfair advantage is that I have a lot of people I can ask for help and pull in, which might be just because of my role at Automatic and everywhere else. So that's something that we should think of, how someone who's not me can also have that ability to pull in resources if they need it.
Now, you at Joomla World Conference Day, you picked the date, and that kind of shocked me because I've never heard you actually pick out a date, exact date for a WordPress release being shipped, and that was December 12th. And I wrote about this, and you and Andrew Nason and everybody else had to immediately point me to the WordPress philosophy. Schedules or dates, release schedules are not arbitrary. So
deadlines are not arbitrary, yeah.
Deadlines are not arbitrary. So can you explain that in relation to you actually picking out a date and sticking by it this time?
I don't think we ever, how to describe it? So I don't think we ever try to you know, miss a date or pick a date and miss it or anything like that. I would also like to point out, I didn't choose the date at Joomla. It had been published previously on the Make Core.
Ah, okay. Well, that's the first I heard of it.
We chose the date a while ago, closer to the beginning of the cycle. Basically, a deadline, I think, is most amazing as a forcing function. So it requires you to prioritize and set your timelines in a way that you're going to hit it. Because it's not, I mean, shipping something on December 12th isn't what happens December 5th through 12th. It doesn't matter. It's what happened November 12th and October 12th and, you know, the months leading up to it. So I think that by having sort of firmness around those sorts of things, you're able to better prioritize everything else in the months leading up to it. And, you know, in the post, I said the things that have slipped or that are not ready are mistakes that I personally take responsibility for, where we didn't start working on something early enough. It's not that it's hard to do or it's impossible. It's just that we should have started to do these things earlier than we did.
Now, in relation to the schedule, Sarah, I know you wrote a post about this. I wish you should talk to Matt about it, but it's the whole plugins as features.
Wait, weren't you guys going to switch off every time?
Yeah, but I wanted her to ask you about the features as plugins first. The developer.
Oh, I just deleted that question, but I'll go ahead and ask it. Why did you? So I guess only recently we've been using this features as plugins model, but WordPress introduced plugins quite early in its history. Why now for turning to that model? Why didn't we do it before? Has WordPress reached a place of maturity where huge parts of code aren't being changed every time, and now it's possible to do the features as plugins? Or why now?
Huh. I think we've tried features. Remember core plugins or canonical plugins?
Mm-hmm.
So we've tried things like this in the past, and I think it's a combination, it's a confluence of a number of things in the environment that made this the most obvious thing to do next. It is the maturity of WordPress's APIs. It is, I would say, that the realm of a lot of the features that are most interesting to users and in future releases tend to be very user-facing things, which might be heavier on, say, client-side code like JavaScript and CSS. It is a reflection of the growth of the size of the WordPress community. So that we did have, 10 or 15 people, which is kind of the size of the entire WordPress core team, working on just this one area, MP6. And we had, those people existed. But really, I put the credit to the entire, the lead developers of WordPress for being open-minded about trying a very, very different approach that wasn't really guaranteed whether it was going to work. And in some ways, hasn't worked exactly like we planned. I mean, there's definitely been some learning and some things we didn't anticipate and some things we're going to try differently in the next iteration. But, that's what I'm most proud of WordPress community in general, is that we are willing to try some of these off-the-wall ideas to see what happens. In other communities, it's really not as common, both successful and unsuccessful ones, because when you're successful, it's even worse, because you think, oh, we should continue doing what worked before. That's actually, I would say, one of the most dangerous types of inflexibility. Did that answer your question? I might have talked about something different. Sorry about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were just, Jeff and I were talking about how much is getting done with these plugins being developed separately and how exciting it's moving fast and there's so much to write about every day. So.
Well, I'm glad it's keeping you guys busy. And I want to see, what I think could be the most significant thing to come out of this is if we can continue development in a single area over several releases. That's something we still to this day have not done well, where we ship something in one release and then we ship it again in the next release. What we tend to do is shift from area to area. And so a single screen, call it like the dashboard screen, will change every couple of years. Not because we're not changing things every release, but because we're shifting which areas we're working on. So I would love the idea of, a group of folks who feel like working on the dashboard is their thing, and every release they ship an iteration and improvement to it.
Yeah, that seems to be very much like how Scott described in his book how the teams work at Automatic. They just adopt the feature and go for their life with it.
When it works well, yeah. But, we run into the same problem where we kind of shift from thing to thing. So sometimes any particular feature. Reblogs is one that's being looped back to now. I mean, reblogs haven't been worked on in the better part of a year. They need to be. And so anytime you have more things you're working on than people, that ends up being something that can happen.
Are you still there?
No. Yeah, I'm still here, but I'm giving you the microphone.
Do you have another one, or should I go for another one?
I've got plenty. I think Mark Jakewith would have loved to have been in your position for 3.8 versus what he had to go through with 3.6 in the whole post formats UI debacle. What happened there and the lessons learned, which he actually did a presentation on at WordCamp London. I can't wait to see the videos that are published so I can see his presentation. But definitely some lessons learned there, and I think it's just fantastic to see that the plugins as or features as plugins first, it's working out so well. And it'd be nice to see that continue on. And I think you've also mentioned in your post with 3.8 that are you going to continue down this road of concurrent development, whereas when 3.8 reaches a certain point, 3.9 is worked on, and then 4.0 and vice versa, it's going to continue on this let's go, go, go type of momentum?
Yeah, you actually raised a really good point I forgot about, which was post-formats and MP6 happened as well. And I think both of those showed what can happen when a feature in core goes wrong and when something outside of core goes right. Concurrent releases. I think that it's not so much about having two releases happen at once. That was, I think, somewhat unique in the sort of position we were in and who was working on them and what was teed up for different ones. I think it's really about having lots of features being worked on all the time. And then at every given release, the release lead is more the shepherd and the editor that takes all these things that are at various stages of completion and iteration and curates them into a single package that we call 3.9 or 4.0. And it's less about, you know, saying something needs to be in a particular release and just saying, well, what's ready? What's been, you know, in the oven long enough that it's ready to serve?
Yep. So, Sarah, go ahead and ask your question, and I'll ask him one more, and then we'll see if we can do a lightning round.
Okay. I saw, Matt, that you were being razzed on Twitter by somebody about something that you said recently, which was, I see the future of WordPress as a web operating system. Can you expound on your vision for this?
Sure. Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by an operating system. So one definition you can use that I think WordPress completely falls under is a, you know, base layer that you can target for, write a program for, like a plugin, that provides distribution, that provides a set of APIs that make it easier and faster for you to do what you want to do to provide value without reinventing the wheel. And that provides a number of services, including authentication, security, updates that are just there. And in that sense, WordPress is an operating system and the one with the largest market share in the world right now for powering websites as an operating system for the web. I stand by that. I think people look at that and they might have different connotations. They say, oh, operating system, that means it's Microsoft, which means it's buggy and insecure, you know. Mm-hmm. Or they say, oh, operating system, like you're not an operating system. You're not, you know, don't have a kernel and write file systems and, you know, you know, those sorts of things. But I think both of those are thinking about it in too small of a way. And that when you really take a step back and think in terms of characteristics and at a global level, it's one of the most interesting platforms to emerge in the past decade, in my opinion. Of course, I'm biased, though.
Right. Jeff?
So something that hasn't been worked on in WordPress for a long time, at least I haven't seen too much in the way of attention, and it's something that I think is very important for WordPress, it's comments. And it's been rare that I've come across a website recently that it's using intense debate to power their comment system. So I just want to know what's going on with intense debate and what are your thoughts on commenting in WordPress in general?
Sure. Intense debate is currently on hold, so it's not being actively worked on inside of Automattic. There has been a lot of work, though, in the Jetpack comment features around subscriptions and authenticating with different social networks and pushing those out and things like that. I think it's pretty interesting. I think that in core, you know, if you notice, a lot of our work has been more on the admin interface, and we haven't, you know, shipped or done a lot of things that are really user-facing where the user is the visitor to a blog, so something like changing comments. Really since maybe threaded comments. And the reason for this is that it's not just doing the feature, it's getting it to work with every single theme in the world. that is quite tricky. And so it's just difficult for us to iterate there. We can provide APIs that themes can use. In some ways you could point to like featured images or a few of the things that we did in 2014 as an example of that. But I think that the most interesting things being done with comments right now are happening as services or inside of Jetpack.
And I think it's worth mentioning that BB Press 2.6, I was reading the roadmap for it, it will have a feature that replaces WordPress comments with BB Press topics. I think that's pretty exciting, kind of the merging between the commenting system and the kind of discussion and community that you can create with the forum, kind of meshing the two together. I think that's an interesting feature there.
Yeah, that's, I call that the tavern feature, because it's...
why do you call it the tavern feature?
Well, because I feel like, well, tavern from years and years ago, it always seemed weird to me that there was a discussion happening in comments and then like this very active forum. I really wish they were the same thing. And I think that is, I think that would be awesome for the site.
Well, I can tell you, I can guarantee you that we're going to use that feature on the site in the near future. I can't wait for it. Before we go to the lightning round, there's one other thing I think it'd be worth mentioning. And some folks have suggested that WordPress has reached the point of maturity where it makes sense to have something like a certification that people can earn that shows a proficient depth of knowledge of the software, sort of like what you would get at like CompTIA for A+ or Network Plus. And it was even suggested that Automattic leads the way with the certification program. I was just wondering, are you in favor of this idea?
It's probably a really good idea, but it's also not something we're working on currently. So there's nothing imminent or even being started there right now.
Okay. So with that said, there's a couple questions I want to ask you that's from our listener community. And the first one is sort of a dark question, and I think we've talked about this a few years ago. But
you put the dark ones in the lightning round?
Yes.
And Sarah, did we get to your really tough one you said you
had? It wasn't a tough one. It was kind of a personal one. It's not really personal, but...
Well, you can go ahead and ask it. We have time.
Okay. Much of the content that relates to your life's work happens online, on the web, and it must be tons of reading to keep up with. What I'm wondering is, how do you manage reading, writing, working, and creating in your daily habits? Like, how do you fit all of that in? And at the end of the day, do you always feel like you wish you had more time?
Oh, absolutely. It shifts and changes over time. I mean, right now, one of my daily reads is track. But, you know, this time last year, it wasn't. So it depends a lot on which project I'm most focused on at the time. For writing, I find actually I restart a lot of my blog posts now on SimpleNote before I take them into WordPress, because it's simpler than even distraction-free writing, and I can bounce between devices really easily. So, you know, I can start something even on my phone, depending on where I am, and then come back to my desktop and write a few more paragraphs or things like that. I love that synchronization of SimpleNote. For reading, typically, I check Twitter, you know, a few times a day. I check Facebook maybe once a day. And email, maybe, you know, some days I'm on email all day, but I would say generally I'm kind of in there once or twice a day, really looking at things. So a lot of the information I get is actually through conversations, you know, chatting on Skype or other places with colleagues, friends, family, and so a lot gets filtered through that sort of the social network of the people I'm talking to the most at the time.
Okay. So does Skype ever end up being like email to you? I mean, because people leave messages while people are gone, you know, and then you sign on and you check them, and it almost becomes like email.
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, obviously at Automattic we use a ton of P2s. And so I would say P2 is most like email for us, in that it's where a lot of communication happens. Skype I often use asynchronously, where I'll drop notes to people or get notes from people, whether we're online. And I think a lot of that's just more a function of working with people across, you know, all time zones. You're not going to be necessarily in front of the computer at the same time.
Right.
And it's so wasteful to try to schedule something when maybe you just have like a sentence or two to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. It's too much for email, but too little for like making a meeting.
That's when you just tweet them. Hey, speaking of P2s, I know that there's a new project going on. Bo Labins might be one of the people working on it, but it's called O2, the successor to P2. Do you have any updates on what's going on with O2?
It is so cool.
Oh, great. Well, that doesn't
really... I really love using O2. And, the things the team's working on, I think, are going to be very, very exciting for folks. I would say think of it not necessarily like a theme for WordPress, and more like a way of working that some people will take to really quickly and some people won't. But it's just kind of put out there without judgment as a value-neutral thing that that if you want to work the same way that Automattic does, this is the best tool to do so.
And I've seen a lot of companies out there, Gravity Forms, for example, uses a P2 behind the scenes to chat and talk with each other and keep updates, like their own little update blog behind the scenes. They're using P2. There's a lot of other companies out there using P2 just like it as well.
Yeah, when you sort of get in there, it works so well. And it's some of the things that are in O2 are honestly just kind of fun. Like, for example, you can drag and drop an image to the page, and it automatically uploads it and then puts the HTML in the post.
And I think it also has an improved real-time experience with commenting, either with AJAX or something else.
Yeah, there's something we've been testing where if someone's typing a reply to the comment, you can actually see like a typing indicator, almost like chat programs do. What's that?
Sort of like in Skype, you could see when they're typing a message to you.
Exactly.
Man, it's getting a little creepy there. Not really, but I guess that's kind of cool in a way. I guess that lets you know they're there. So our lightning round, somebody asked, now the WordPress.org and the WordPress community as a whole is more than just a cool open source project. Lots of hard work has built an economy that thousands of developers depend on for their livelihood. So he wants to know, how tied in is the success and future of WordPress.org to you as an individual, and how can you reassure those of us that depend on WordPress.org to support our families that if something were to happen to you, that's the dark part, that WordPress.org would still keep going on strong?
Yeah, I mean, that's something I work on. I can't guarantee it. I mean, lots of software projects fail even when the founder's still there. But there's a lot of great people involved in the community now, and I have no doubt that definitely all the ingredients are there for WordPress to continue being a success, regardless of my involvement or not. But I do feel like, especially at this point, my involvement can help it a ton, which is why I am so involved and want to remain involved.
And I think a large part of that has to do with your ideals and the ideals that people have gravitated around in the culture of WordPress.org development itself, the open source nature, the GPL license, and, of course, the creation of the WordPress.org Foundation.
Yeah, and all of those things. I mean, particularly the GPL ensures that, yeah, the very core of it will be around forever.
So the next question is, what is the coolest WordPress story or experience you've had so far in your 10 years of working with WordPress?
Well, that's impossible to answer. And I think there's another one around, like, what's the coolest thing you've seen in Africa? Both really, really difficult to answer. I'm kind of surprised and delighted almost every day, definitely every week, with some of the things that come across my desk. And really, I mean, to me, what keeps me so excited is just the change and the evolution. I'm not doing the same thing I was 10 years ago or even 1 year ago. None of us are. What we're working on has changed. The environment has changed. The competitive landscape changes. Like, all of that is constantly shifting. And so navigating that world is honestly more fun than any game I could imagine or almost anything I could imagine. It's a cool challenge. You know, the scoreboard is maybe the market share, the quality of the product, how proud you are of the things you put out there, and the people you get to spend the most time with every day. And I approaching 30, having kind of a midlife crisis.
Already?
But I had one at 25, most definitely, and so this is like my next one. But overall, when I look at those things, especially most importantly the people who I spend the most time interacting with every day, I feel in a very, very good place. And that's one of the things I appreciate the most. And also that these are people who I want to be working with 5 and 10 years from now, that I want to celebrate my 40th birthday with. So despite, you know, my midlife crisis and all the worries and everything else I'm having, that provides me a lot of solace.
Oh, go ahead.
I said solace and hope.
So the last time I checked, WordPress was powering 20.8% of the web. How does that statistic make you feel?
Awesome. But there's a lot more to go. You know, the joke is you have 79.2% left. So still working on it.
Wow. That would be insane. 100% WordPress on the web.
Well, nothing's ever 100%. That's actually impossible. But you can asymptotically approach it. And I think that if we keep doing, if we can continue the things that we started this year around how we develop and iterate and everything like that, I have no doubt WordPress could continue to grow at the same rate it has, or even faster.
So ever since the multi-site feature became a big part of WordPress, this person says, I can't help but wonder if subsites, subdomain, or folder will have this capability too. So in other words, multi-site within a multi-site. Will this be a possibility in the near future, or can you do that now?
Yeah, you can do anything now. It's just code. But I do commiserate that multi-site is one of those things we haven't worked on in a while and need some love. And one of the things we actually looked at for 3.8 was bringing in the domain mapping plugin in the core. Because I actually had completely forgotten that that wasn't something that WordPress does natively, that you do need a plugin to do it. That did not make it for a variety of reasons, but I do believe that multi-site is an area that we can and should focus on. It's also an area for, you know, because people listening to this by definition are some of the more involved WordPress folks in the world. There's a lot of opportunity for leadership there. So if there's something where you've been feeling like you are looking for a place to have a big impact on WordPress, the multi-site component is definitely one where there's a lot of opportunity.
And the last question I have for you today is, are you happy with the current WordPress mobile apps, and what are your plans for the guy also known as Tom Wicken, who wrote the most excellent poster app?
Well, Tom's on the mobile team, so he's working on the next release of WordPress for iOS that I believe is going to be 3.9. So that's out there. Where am I? I'm not happy with apps, but you know, I'm not happy with core WordPress either. I'm not happy with Jetpack. I'm not happy with WordPress.com.
Well, if you got happy, I guess you get bored.
maybe a better way to put it is I'm happy, but I'm not satisfied.
Well, okay, there you go.
So I think that we can do better.
Always striving to make it better.
Yeah, and the team, I think, is organized in a way that can make it better. Not just Tom, but, you know, the over 13 or 14 of his colleagues that are working on the mobile projects. When you think of what they're doing, it's actually quite hard because they have to replicate. You know, we had 200-some-odd people work on just the last, you know, 3.7. So they have to do all of that work across multiple platforms in a language that's not a web language, you know, either Cocoa or Java, Objective-C or Java, with just, you know, a small fraction of the people, fewer than 10% of the people. So it's a hard problem, but we're figuring out how to do it better. And I think, you know, what we've changed there is we're trying to orient it, the teams, less around platform and more around feature. So if we can get thinking about, say, a post editor or perhaps how notifications work and look at it holistically across the web, Android, iOS, and other, and develop that simultaneously rather than sort of more siloed into each platform, we can both spread the burden a little bit so the folks who worked on the web side of things can also help out on the mobile, and we can just be a bit more coherent across our interfaces, make sure that the best thinking and best design is going into all of them, and we're not being different just for the sake of being different.
And I think it's also worth mentioning whether it was, I don't know if it's 3.7 or 3.8, where the admin has become responsive now. So if you log into the admin through the mobile app, the back end of WordPress is not responsive, which helps out a lot.
Yeah, and I think we should honestly probably do a little more there. So if you're loading the WordPress admin inside of the WordPress app, you know, perhaps we could do something smart with the menus or something like that to make it even more natively integrated.
Well, that rounds up the questions I have for you. Sarah, do you have anything else for Matt? I'll give you one last opportunity.
No, thanks for joining us, Matt. We really enjoyed having you.
Hey, it is always a pleasure checking with you guys. Let's try to do it a little more frequently, more than once every, you know, couple of years.
I definitely plan on it. And you will be, as I mentioned in the chat room earlier today, a double shot of Matt today is better than a shot of espresso. So you'll actually be, I think it's 2 hours into Word Sesh tonight, which is 9 p.m. Eastern time. Siobhan will actually be doing an interview with you live with Word Sesh. I think it's really cool that you're participating in this year's event. It's like a virtual WordCamp.
Totally. I'm actually really excited about it. So, yeah, about 5 hours from now.
She'll be doing this again.
Much like you, is very well versed in the history of WordPress, and she's working on that book.
Yeah, I can't wait to read more chapters of that book. I learned some stuff just from reading the chapter of pretty much the birth of WordPress. I can't wait to see what else she comes up with. And it's also worth noting that when she was writing the book, it's sad in the way that some of the conversations and things that took place are gone. They weren't properly archived, like the very earliest discussions that happened on the mailing list. And there's some things way back when WordPress was first around that are kind of lost. So I hope that she's able to recover most of that and add that to her book.
Yeah, and sometimes we find a little bit more. Like we found the database dump that looks like it was the old B2 forms and things like that. So, I mean, I feel like these things are somewhere in the world. It's just a matter of finding, you know, whose hard drive or what old disk they're on.
Matt, I just want to thank you very much for spending some of your busy quality time with us. We look forward to having you on again, and congratulations on WordPress 3.8. And according to your post, if there's no blockers, we should see you on December 12th, right?
See you that morning. Yep.
Awesome. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's J-E-F-F-R-0. And you can also follow Sarah on Twitter at
Polly Plummer, P-O-L-L-Y-P-L-U-M-M-E-R.
And until next week, have a safe and enjoyable weekend, everybody.